Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter, Anna Mateo, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
The United States says the offices of the General Delegation of the Palestine Liberation Organization in Washington should close. The U.S. State Department said on Monday that the PLO has not taken steps to support the start of direct and meaningful negotiations with Israel. The Associated Press reports that a requirement in U.S. law states that the PLO mission must close if the peace process does not move forward. President Donald Trump has shown strong support for Israel and criticized Palestinian leaders for not doing enough to work toward a peace deal. The Trump administration said that the PLO has not worked with the U.S. government in peace efforts. The group has also condemned an American peace plan that has yet to be released. The State Department added that the decision to close the PLO offices is consistent with concerns within the administration and in the U.S. Congress. Issues of concern include Palestinian attempts to get the International Criminal Court to take legal action against Israel. The ICC was established in 2002. The court's aim is to bring to justice individuals accused of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. President Trump's National Security Advisor, John Bolton, spoke about the ICC during his visit Monday to the Federalist Society Research Group in Washington. Bolton noted that the U.S. government never signed the treaty creating the court and does not recognize it. He also said the U.S. would consider restrictions against ICC lawyers or officials involved in efforts to investigate Americans. The U.S. government has traditionally positioned itself as a neutral party in the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. The U.S. does not recognize the Palestinian territories of the West Bank and Gaza as an independent state. The United Nations General Assembly, however, voted in 2012 to recognize Palestine as what it calls a member observer state. The statements by the State Department and Bolton come as the U.S. government has increased pressure on the Palestinians to get involved in peace efforts. This month, the United States announced it was stopping payments to the UN agency that helps Palestinian refugees. The U.S. government supplies nearly 30% of the budget for the UN Relief and Works Agency. In addition to UN aid, the government canceled another $200 million in direct aid to Palestinians last month. The PLO denounced the decision to close its Washington offices. PLO Executive Committee member Hanan Ashrawi said the U.S. policy was unfair. She said, through its actions, the U.S. seeks to punish the Palestinian people as a whole. I'm Mario Ritter.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Breakfast, the first meal of the day. Some people love it. They look forward to breaking their nighttime fast with a big meal. Others may like to eat something small. For those who skip breakfast altogether, this article might not be for you.
There are many common foods shared between countries, although they may be cooked differently. But whichever side people fall on, a big breakfast or small one, chances are it involves a cup of coffee or tea.
Americans are not very creative people when it comes to breakfast. That's not to say there aren't many choices. There are. Common breakfast foods are bacon and eggs, bagel with cream cheese, pancakes or waffles with a side of sausage, a sandwich with egg, cheese, and vegetables, oatmeal topped with dried fruit and nuts, or if we're in a hurry, a bowl of cold cereal with milk.
But some foods are simply not on the family breakfast menu. Things such as a whole fish, olives, tofu, pasta, or rice. In fact, if you serve salmon left over from dinner for breakfast, you may hear people say, "That's not a breakfast food." So, what does breakfast look like around the world?
We looked at several websites to find out. On BuzzFeed.com, writer Julie Gerstein lists 28 breakfasts from around the world. And in the UK, writer April Walago did the same for The Independent.
In some areas of the world, breakfast includes just about anything. There is seemingly nothing that is not a breakfast food. Turkey is one such place. People in Turkey seem to have endless choices for breakfast. A morning table may have eggs, bread with butter, honey, or jam, tomatoes, cucumbers, olives, Turkish sausage, and tea are also common dishes in a Turkish breakfast.
On a German breakfast table, you might see different kinds of bread, cold meats and cheeses, with butter and jam on the side. You may also have some sliced vegetables or yogurt with fruit. In Poland, a common breakfast food is an open-faced sandwich with meat and cheese. They also commonly have scrambled eggs, hot dogs without the bun, and pickled vegetables. In spring and summer, they eat more fruit and vegetables for breakfast. They may also add donuts filled with jam to the breakfast table.
Several food websites also say that Koreans eat the same foods at breakfast that they may eat at lunch and dinner. So you might have rice, kimchi, a traditional spicy pickled cabbage, soups with tofu and pickled vegetables. One website says Korean people like to add any leftovers from dinner the night before to breakfast, which is simply a great idea.
A typical breakfast in Japan may look the same. People may begin their day eating rice with pickled vegetables, fish, or egg, and miso soup. In a country as large as China, breakfast looks different from region to region. People may eat a fried dough called youtiao with a cup of warm milk, or rice soup with pickled vegetables. Or you may have a hot roasted sweet potato. In some parts of China, breakfast could be noodles with vegetables and meat.
India is the same. Breakfast in each part of the country can look very different. One common meal might be pan-fried bread served with vegetables and a variety of chutneys or sauces. A breakfast in Mexico could be as hearty as beans, eggs, cheese, and tomato on top of a toasted corn tortilla. Or it could be as simple as a churro, a thin deep-fried dough topped with sugar and cinnamon, dipped in coffee or hot chocolate.
In the Andalusian part of Spain, you might simply have a crusty roll with olive oil and salt on top to go with your coffee. In Cuba, grilled buttered bread, or tostado, with coffee and milk is a common breakfast as well. People in Mozambique may eat breakfast sandwiches made with eggs or fish.
The website Awesome Amsterdam lists some of the most famous breakfast foods of the Netherlands. Many people there like to eat bread with a fried egg, meat, cheese, or thin slices of chocolate. A ham and cheese sandwich is also a common breakfast food. Or you may simply choose to have a piece of sweet spice cake to dunk in your coffee.
In Colombia, you may have a sweet corn cake. These are fried and topped with meat, eggs, and cheese, or just butter and jam. People in Nigeria may eat a deep-fried dish made from black-eyed peas and spices. They often eat these with a bowl of thick corn pudding. In Russia, breakfast may include sausage, a bowl of porridge, dark rye bread, or cheese-filled cakes fried in a pan.
People in some countries keep things very simple at breakfast, just coffee or tea, and some sort of bread. In Italy, breakfast is often a cup of coffee with milk and a bread roll with jam. In Tanzania, a common breakfast is a cup of tea with bread or maybe a thin pancake.
People in Kenya may start their day with fruit, a type of bread called flatbread, and a cup of hot tea. And in France, strong coffee with a croissant, plain or filled with chocolate, is a common breakfast. Several websites say that in Brazil, breakfast is not a big deal. That honor goes to lunch. To start their day, Brazilians often drink coffee with milk, even the children. With that, they may simply have a slice of toasted French bread. Papaya is a very common breakfast fruit, but any seasonal fruit is often a part of breakfast. Or instead, many Brazilians may simply eat a lightly sweetened cake.
These are simply some breakfast dishes from around the world. I'm Brian Lin.
And I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
A stunning and cowardly strike on the United States. The president vows the killers will pay for this attack on America.
The United States changed as a result of the September 11th terrorist attacks. CBS newsman Dan Rather expressed what many Americans were feeling.
You will remember this day as long as you live.
On the morning of that sunny September day that came to be known as 9/11, the nation came under attack from Al-Qaeda, an extremist group led by Osama bin Laden. Its targets were world-famous buildings representing America's economic and military power. Al-Qaeda operatives hijacked four American passenger airplanes. The hijackers were from Middle Eastern countries. Each group included a pilot trained to fly two kinds of Boeing airliners, the 757 and the 767. At 8:46 on that morning, one group of hijackers flew a Boeing 767 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. 17 minutes later, another group flew a second 767 into the Trade Center's South Tower. The planes exploded in fireballs that sent clouds of smoke into the air. The intense heat of the burning jet fuel from the planes caused structural failures that brought down both buildings. About an hour after the first plane hit the World Trade Center, another group of Al-Qaeda operatives flew a 757 airliner into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the Defense Department in Arlington, Virginia. The plane exploded against a wall of the huge building where more than 20,000 people worked. A fourth group had taken control of another 757, but some of the passengers on that flight, United 93, had heard about the terrorist attacks through phone calls to their families. Several passengers and crew members attempted to retake control of the plane. It crashed near the town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Investigators later said the hijackers probably planned to attack the Capitol, a major government building in Washington, D.C., where Congress meets. There was also concern that the White House could have been a target. The 9/11 attacks saw the worst loss of lives on American soil since Japan attacked Pearl Harbor in 1941. That attack caused the United States to enter World War II.
The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger.
As expressed by President George W. Bush on 9/11, the attacks left Americans in a state of shock and disbelief. But that was soon replaced by anger and a resolve that such events would not be allowed to happen again.
These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve.
At Ground Zero, the site of the World Trade Center destruction,
Rescue efforts continued into the night. New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani was asked if Arab American or Muslim groups in New York might be targeted due to the nature of the attacks.
Just the opposite. They will receive extra protection. The particular individuals responsible and the groups responsible, that's up to law enforcement, and it's up to the United States government to figure out. And citizens of New York should, even if they have anger, which is understandable, it isn't their place to get involved in this. And then they're just participating in the kind of activity we just witnessed. And New Yorkers are not like that.
And Giuliani spoke of the strength of spirit of the people of his city.
People tonight should say a prayer for the people that we've lost and be grateful that we're all here. And tomorrow, New York is going to be here, and we're going to rebuild, and we're going to be stronger than we were before.
On September 20th, President Bush went before a joint session of Congress to declare a war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
President Bush explained that the war on terror would be different from other wars.
Our response involves far more than instant retaliation and isolated strikes. Americans should not expect one battle, but a lengthy campaign, unlike any other we have ever seen. We will starve terrorists of funding, turn them one against another, drive them from place to place, until there is no refuge or no rest. And we will pursue nations that provide aid or safe haven to terrorism. Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. From this day forward, any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime.
President Bush demanded that the Taliban rulers of Afghanistan stop sheltering Osama bin Laden and surrender him. The president also called on the Taliban to close terrorist training camps in Afghanistan. The Taliban refused. They demanded evidence that Osama bin Laden had been involved in the attacks of 9/11. They said that if such evidence was provided, he would be tried in an Islamic court. The United States refused to provide evidence. On October 7th, the United States and Britain launched airstrikes against Taliban targets. What became known as the War on Terror had begun. Tribal groups from the opposition Northern Alliance led a ground attack. But suicide bombers had killed their leader, Ahmad Shah Massoud, on September 9th, 2 days before the 9/11 attacks. By November, Taliban control began to collapse in several provinces. Taliban forces fled Kabul, the capital. But the ouster of the Taliban government did not mean the end of the war on terror. Some of President Bush's advisors had long supported an invasion of Iraq. As early as October 2001, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld suggested that military action against Iraq was possible. Government officials accused Iraq of having links to terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda. They noted that Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein had used chemical weapons, and they said he was seeking to develop biological and nuclear weapons as well. In October 2001, Congress passed the USA Patriot Act. This law provided the government with more power
to gather information about suspected terrorists in the United States. Critics said the law invaded constitutional rights to privacy. Civil liberties groups said the Patriot Act gave law enforcement and other agencies too much power. In January 2002, President Bush gave his State of the Union report to Congress. He accused some nations of supporting terrorist organizations. He said the United States would not wait to be attacked by such groups. Instead, it would strike first at the countries that sheltered them. The president identified three nations, North Korea, Iran, and Iraq, as supporters of terror.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world by seeking weapons of mass destruction. These regimes pose a grave and growing danger. They could provide these arms to terrorists, giving them the means to match their hatred.
In 2002, the United States opened a detention center at its naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Some of the fighters arrested in Afghanistan were sent there. They were not considered prisoners of war. Instead, the detainees were treated as unlawful enemy combatants. As such, the Bush administration said they did not have the same rights as war prisoners under international treaties. In the United States, the government also detained some foreign citizens, mostly for violating immigration laws. No terrorism charges were brought against these detainees. Human rights activists and some legal experts protested the detentions. After 9/11, government agencies were criticized for failing to prevent the terrorist attacks. Critics said the agencies should have been working together to gather intelligence. Government officials said part of the issue involved legal restrictions on the gathering and sharing of intelligence. In January 2003, the Department of Homeland Security opened for business.
Maybe you see something suspicious, but you don't want to get involved. It's nothing, you think. Can you be sure?
There was a lot to do.
If you see something, say something. Report suspicious activity to local authorities.
Transportation security, immigration, law enforcement, border protection. It represented the biggest government reorganization in more than half a century. All or part of 22 federal agencies and departments were combined into the new agency. Its job, to keep America safe in a world that had changed in a single day. The War on Terror, which began after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States, escalated in March 2003, when a coalition of American-led forces invaded Iraq. The mission, as stated by President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair, was to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and to free the Iraqi people.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.